Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. I'm very pleased to say we're joined, I believe, for the first time by Congressman Barry Loudermilk. He is the representative of the people of the 11th Congressional District of Georgia in the United States House of Representatives. He serves on two very important committees of direct relevance to some of the matters of great interest to us here at Secure Freedom Radio, the House Homeland Security Committee, and indeed he serves on its Subcommittee on Emergency Preparedness, Response, and Communications, as well as its Oversight and Management Subcommittee. He's also a member of the House Science, Space, and Technology Committee. Congressman, welcome. I'm delighted to have you with us, and thank you for joining us and the work you're doing.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the work you're doing, and we need more of it. The world is a dangerous place, and I'm very excited about being on the air with you.
Good. Well, let's talk about some of the challenges. You, as I mentioned earlier in my conversation with your colleague, Congressman Mike Pompeo, were very supportive of a piece of legislation that we've been anxious to see enacted for some time now, the Critical Infrastructure Protection Act, which your committee voted out last week. Talk a little bit, if you would, Congressman, about the vulnerabilities of our electric grid to both man-caused and naturally occurring phenomena that justify this kind of planning and hopefully preparation for protection.
Well, you know, the grid has always been an important factor in the U.S. ever since we started distributing electricity at a broad scale. But in the past, it's been predominantly because industry relied upon it, the health and safety and security of individuals. But we have become so dependent on electricity. I mean, every aspect from our economy to financial, health care, national security, every aspect of our society is dependent on having electricity readily available, clean, and not sustainable, but reliable. As we've seen growth in technology, we've also seen growth in technology in the management of the grid. And so now the protection of this infrastructure goes not just from the physical, but also to the cyber side, because most of the substations, the delivery mechanism of the electric grid is all controlled electronically. It's and in a large part uses the internet to do that. And so the susceptibility to attack is beyond just the physical, has moved into the cyber. And so we've taken a lot of emphasis on that cyber side, but still we have to realize that there is a physical security threat that is there as well. And most people think of the large providers of electricity. Well, just in Georgia, we have scores of small municipal-owned electric providers that they don't have the infrastructure for protecting their connectivity or the physical security that maybe the large ones like Sutter Company and Alabama Power and Georgia Power have. So those are other areas we're looking at.
Well, the one other piece of this, which I know is very much of concern to the Science, Space, and Technology Committee, are naturally occurring phenomena like these massive as they call them, coronal mass ejections or geomagnetic disturbances. I've talked with the chairman of your committee, Lamar Smith, in the past about having a hearing on that subject because, you know, this and the man-induced version of electromagnetic pulse can be of a fatal impact on our grid, as well as you know. Again, our guest is Congressman Barry Loudermilk, and he has been very involved in these issues, and we're appreciative of that, sir. But I also wanted to talk about another area of concern to your committee and to you. You recently participated in a congressional delegation that went to Europe and the Middle East with your chairman, Mike McCall, to look into this problem of foreign fighters joining the global jihad, the Islamic State and others. Talk about your findings from this excursion and, more to the point, what we should be doing about this threat here at home.
Well, we visited 8 countries in 11 days. The trip included Israel, Jordan, Kuwait, Iraq, and Baghdad, as well as Germany, Belgium, and France. And what we're looking at is we are seeing the largest convergence of foreign fighters going into Syria than we've ever seen in history. ISIS is doing a tremendous recruitment campaign. We can't look at ISIS in the same way that we look at Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda is a terrorist organization. They exist. They operate to kill people and break things. I mean, that's what they are there for, to plan and schedule it and recruit for attacks, especially in the West. ISIS is a nation state. For all intents and purposes, it's much like Nazi Germany. They have an extreme ideology. Their idea is world domination, to establish a worldwide caliphate. And they are occupying parts of other countries. And they actually have a political arm as well as a civilian societal or cultural arm as well as a military arm. So they are operating as a country. With that, they have been able to create their own economy. They're involved in the black market trade. They are also recruiting engineers, computer scientists, doctors. They, by the way, if you are inside the caliphate, they offer free health care, total free health care. So with part of that, they're actually bringing in some pretty savvy folks that know how to not only get on the internet, but do it in an effective way. I mean, I was in the IT business for 20 years. One of the things, it's one thing to be on Facebook. It's another thing to be able to know the algorithms to optimize your exposure. And they know how to do this.
Yeah. I heard a stunning statistic the other day that to the effect that the Islamic State is reaching out to people via these electronic capabilities, social networking, and so on, to the tune of something like 100 million contacts per day. I don't know if that's right or not, but it's breathtaking in its scope. And, of course, as you say, the implications are extraordinary as well. Can I just ask you to drill down on one piece of this, which is kind of maddening to me? I believe we have not properly understood the enemy. I think you've characterized it perfectly, but we keep bumping up against the euphemism that the president has imposed and kind of the willful blindness about the nature of this enemy, because it's characterized as violent extremism rather than the sorts of things you've just described, this ideologically driven, you know, Sharia jihad program that is all about our submission. Do you think that that's contributing to a lack of, not just clarity, but corrective action?
It is. And one of the things, and I brought this up in a hearing we had with the Department of Homeland Security, FBI, others who were working to secure our nation, is, you know, when you looked at Nazi Germany, our military not just looked at their military capability, their combat experience, but they looked at the ideology behind it, because you have to understand what is motivating and driving an enemy if you're going to have a long-term strategy to defeat them. By ignoring the ideology behind this, the extremism, as they call it, you can't come up with a long-term strategy. If you look from 9/11, terrorism has only continued to grow. Now, I'll give our government credit. Department of Homeland Security, the FBI, our intelligence community has done a phenomenal job in stopping numerous attacks. But we're reactive. We're stopping the attacks. We haven't done a good job of a long-term strategy of how to make sure that our nation stays safe and secure. And because of that, we've seen a growth in extremism, as they call it, violent extremism. Now, when they talk about VE, as they call it, they're incorporating the jihadists as the same as you would domestic violent extremists.
Right. And I don't think they constitute nearly the same kinds of threats either. In this regard, Congressman, I was just struck. I think it was in that same hearing you're referring to that the FBI attested to the fact that they were unable to vet refugees being brought to this country from places like Syria, for example, to determine whether they embrace this ideology or not. And this raises a real concern, I think, in the minds of a lot of Americans as to whether we're actually compounding this problem by enabling the migration, the hijra, as the jihadists call it, to the United States of more who embrace this ideology and pose a threat to trying to impose it on us. I'm afraid we're out of time. There's so much more I wanted to talk to you about, not least the fact that as a lieutenant colonel in the Civil Air Patrol, and we thank you for your service in that regard, what's been going on with the Transportation Security Administration lately. But that's for another day. I hope you'll come back to us again, sir, soon. Congressman Barry Loudermilk of Georgia, we're deeply appreciative for both your time today and the service you're rendering to our country. Keep it up and come back to us again soon. Next up, former Deputy Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services, Tevi Troy, joins us to talk about a deadly virus from the Middle East. Is it coming to a theater near you? Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.